Blog Talk Radio.
Skyrocketing healthcare and insurance costs. Extremely modest gains against chronic disease. Thousands die yearly due to drug reactions. What can be done? Thomas Edison is quoted as declaring, "The doctor of the future will give no medicine, but interest his patients in diet and nutrition, exercise, and the care of the human frame. He will teach them about the cause of all disease. The doctors of the future are here." Welcome to Blue Zone Wellness with your host, Keith Henry, ND, one of the doctors of the future.
Hi, and welcome to Blue Zone Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. Thank you for joining me here on this beautiful, beautiful Sunday afternoon in the Orlando, Florida area. If you've listened to me before, or if you haven't, I'm a traditionally trained naturopath with a practice and ministry located in Orlando, Florida. And I approach natural medicine from a Christian perspective every Sunday afternoon from 4 to 5 p.m. Hope you'll be sure to join me right here on BlueZoneWellness.org. To all of my listeners, wherever you might be around the world, welcome once again. A special welcome to my friends from Costa Rica, as always. And we have a very interesting show for you today here on Blue Zone Wellness. We're going to be talking about, following our same outline, rather, where we deal with the week in natural news first. We look at articles that came out during the week, and we discuss, analyze these articles. Then we go into the healing food segment, where we talk about a particular healing food or group of healing foods that benefit the body and from what angles that they actually benefit the body. And finally, in our final segment, we look at a healing herb or supplement and how it's typically used in the body. And this week, we have a very, very interesting show for you. Before we get started with that, though, I'd like to remind you that if you want to call in with a question or a comment, you can do so toll-free at 917-889-2207. That's 917-889-2207. You can visit me at facebook.com. You can friend request me at facebook.com/naturedoc. That's facebook.com/naturedoc. Or you can follow me at Blue Zone Wellness on twitter.com@BlueZoneWellness. Also, you can visit and read articles at BlueZoneWellness.org as well as at phase3ministries.com/WordPress. Loads and loads of free information there on those two blogs. Again, that's BlueZoneWellness.org and phase3ministries, that's PHASE, the number 3ministries.com/WordPress. You can read there loads of free information at these natural health blogs. Again, we are going to give you a brief outline of what we're going to be talking about today in our first segment. We're going to be talking about how high heels can actually affect your health. You might be surprised at some of the symptoms that can be caused by wearing high heels, especially on a consistent basis. Then we're also going to talk about, should we eat several small meals? Or should we eat two or three meals? And this is a question that I get quite often in seminars or in my practice. People hear that we should eat, it's better to eat many small meals as opposed to eating large meals or eating significant meals. Now, it's never good to eat too large of a meal, but we're going to talk about this conventional wisdom that's changing to where we suggestion that we should eat many small meals as opposed to eating large meals, two or three large meals. And we're also going to talk about the liver function. We're going to talk a little bit about the function of the liver and how being overweight or obese can actually lead to you having a fatty liver, and that can cause big problems. And most people really have their liver is not functioning up to the capacity that it could be simply because of the burden that we put on our livers due to lack of exercise, lack of eating a general healthy diet, and eating a lot of processed foods, etc. Finally, we're going to go into our healing foods, and we're going to talk a little bit more about alkaline foods, some of the top alkaline foods to help achieve and maintain vibrant health. And finally, we'll finish with the discussion that we were having last week with respect to vitamin K2 and calcium being necessary in the system and why they're necessary. We talked about that a little bit last week, and again, before we're going to go ahead and try and finish that up this week. You're listening to Blue Zone Wellness. When we come back, we're going to jump right into the show for this week. Again, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. Back in a moment.
Do you know anyone that has health issues? Of course you do. Have you noticed the rise in popularity of natural therapies and alternative medicine? Sure you have. Have you ever wondered if alternative therapies work or if it's just all quackery? Then you need to visit the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog at phase3ministries.com/WordPress. Keith Henry, ND, is trained in natural naturopathy and provides amazing insight at the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog that he has gained from years of hands-on experience. Check it out after this show at phase3ministries.com/WordPress.
Men, have trouble getting your stream to start? Look for a men's room everywhere you go? Need to go so urgently you can't wait? Worry about impotence, sexual dysfunction, and cancer? Then you need our best-selling supplement, Maximum Prostate. Each Maximum Prostate capsule contains 300 milligrams of pure natural mixed beta-cytosterols from plant sources. That's as much beta-cytosterol content as 3,000 capsules of dried saw palmetto berries. Men all over the U.S. and other countries are experiencing the amazing benefits of Maximum Prostate. You can join them now. To the listeners of Blue Zone Wellness, we are offering you 2 bottles of Maximum Prostate for just $39.95 plus shipping. Just go to MaximumProstate.net and place your order right now. That's MaximumProstate.net, and join the numerous other men who have experienced the power of Maximum Prostate.
You are listening to Blue Zone Wellness with Dr. Keith Henry on BlueZoneWellness.org. Be sure to join us here every week at the same time. You can also listen at blogtalkradio.com/BlueZoneWellness. There you can also download the app and listen to the archive versions on your smartphone. So from Blue Zone Wellness, here's to your health.
Welcome back to Blue Zone Wellness. Thank you for listening once again. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. We're going to go ahead and get started with our interesting show today. And the first article that we are going to deal with in this, our Weekend Natural Foods Review section, is an article by health educator Byron Richards. And this is an article that we're going to discuss and analyze that I mentioned that talked about obesity and how obesity can lead to fatty liver damage, and how many of us already have our liver or need cleansing, need detoxifying, and we're just going to talk about how some of these things occur, and especially if you're obese or overweight, how you're actually damaging your liver, and your liver is actually one of the most important organs in your body. It has probably 5,000 or 6,000 functions that. At least between 4,000 and 6,000 functions that we know of. Now, according to Byron Richards in this article, it was published on November the 30th, 2012, entitled "Preventing Obesity-Related Fatty Liver Damage." And it's a little bit outside of our week range. We try and stay within a week, but sometimes we find articles that are very interesting or informative or we think necessary. So at that point, I may go outside a little bit of the range if the article really fits. And it may fall a day or two outside of our Weekend Natural News. Anyway, the article starts off, Byron Richards starts off by pointing out how the liver is the metabolic brain of our bodies and that it is actually the workhorse that processes and stores and distributes every calorie that we consume, which is true. He goes on to point out how your liver must also work for you to clear toxins out of your body of any kind, as well as make bile for digestive purposes. We know that the liver produces the bile that goes into the gallbladder, and it's stored in the gallbladder to help break down and to digest foods. He points out in this article, as liver function deteriorates, so goes health in general. And research shows that the nutrient N-acetylcysteine, or NAC, can prevent the adverse progression of liver deterioration that would be typical in any person who is overweight. So if we stop and think about what Byron is saying here, he's pointing out the connection between being obese or overweight. I think you might have lost me there for a moment. We should be back on now. At any rate, I was pointing out how the liver is connected to being overweight, or liver deterioration, rather, is connected to being overweight or being obese. It has a negative burden upon the liver. Now, as also the article goes on to point out further, as you gain weight, your body looks for various places to store extra fat. This is true, because your white adipose tissue is being strained and inflamed too much or overinflamed. And so your body's goal is to find some place to put the extra fat so that it does not clog arteries and organs and make them incapable of functioning. And the article points out further how our bodies have two or more backup symptoms for almost every issue. It is amazing how, when we look at the human body, the Creator has built the body to survive. Even when we abuse the body over long amounts of time, the body tends to bounce back. And because the Creator has put, if you will, emergency measures in it to stay alive at all costs. And so we're going to continue with this article. Byron points out in the article, he says, in this case, the body will start storing extra fat in your liver cells. This is called simple fatty liver steatosis. It is invariably happening as your waistline expands. This is actually a natural system to help your body deal with calorie abuse. It's not harmful in and of itself, he writes. He goes on to say, as you lose weight, you will deplete the extra fat in your liver as the backup system is no longer needed. So basically, he's pointing out how as your waistline increases, that you gain excess weight, the body, one of the backup systems of the body, is to take that extra fat and put it in different places, away from organs and away from arteries that would tend to hinder the function. One of the places that it will store that is in your liver. And so here, hence, you can end up with fatty liver damage. And as he points out in the article, he goes on to say further, as your waistline continues to expand, your liver's backup storage system is progressively overwhelmed with too much fat, if the problem is not corrected, that is. This starts to occur at the point your waistline is more than half your height in inches. So let's back up and look at this again. He points out, as your waistline continues to expand, your liver's backup storage system is progressively overwhelmed with too much fat. This starts to occur at the point that your waistline is more than half your weight in inches. The larger your waist, the greater the risk for the problems. This sets a cascade of problems in motion marked by inflammation and free radical damage, leading to a problem called NASH, or non-alcoholic steatohepatitis. Now, non-alcoholic steatohepatitis basically means that your liver cells are being damaged, and they're losing functional capacity, and scar tissue is forming. And if NASH progresses, it can eventually become cirrhosis of your liver, or meaning advanced scarring and even severe liver damage, all from being overweight or obese over time. Now, let me point out, in as much as we're talking about the liver here, one thing that has the same effect as if you were drinking alcohol on the liver. And this is a little bit, just a little footnote to this article, that if you're a consumer of ice cream, I'm not talking about soy ice cream, but I'm talking about dairy ice cream, and the constituents of the sugar in the milk when they make the ice cream, if you're a large consumer of ice cream, understand that when you combine sugar and milk in that process in the body, it ferments. And it has the same effect as if you were drinking alcohol upon your liver. So even though you may not have taken a drink in your life, if you eat sugar and milk when they're combined in the system, again, it has a fermentation effect. And on the liver, it has the same effect as if you were drinking alcohol. That's just a side note with respect to your liver health. You don't have this problem when you're dealing with soy ice cream or the natural ice creams. But anytime you're mixing dairy, which is an animal product, with sugar, you're going to have that problem. Now, this article goes on to point out further. He says that in the current study, he's referring to a study, the antioxidant NAC did not block the storage of fat, nor would it be expected to do so. However, it proved quite effective at helping to reduce free radical damage and inflammation within the liver, directly reducing the stress factors characteristic of NASH. He pointed to the study. He says, this study signifies that people who are overweight have a much higher need for antioxidants to protect their liver. He says, of course, the same antioxidants that protect your liver also protect your brain. Liver and brain are the two natural fattiest organs in the body. While the current study looked at NAC or NAC, it is well-established science that many nutrients work synergistically with NAC to boost glutathione. Glutathione is a amino acid in your cells, thereby providing protection. In the case of your liver, fat-soluble antioxidants are going to be the most important. These include vitamin E, R-alpha-lipoic acid, vitamin K, CoQ10, and, of course, milk thistle, which is very beneficial herb for your liver. Now, he goes on to point out further in the article that following a good diet and regular exercise will, of course, reduce fatty accumulation in your liver. So there's another thing when we talk about exercise that we've talked about here on Blue Zone Wellness and how we talk about it being one of those laws of health. Here we see another one of the benefits, how exercise helps to reduce fatty liver problems or reduce fatty accumulation in your liver. So just by exercising, which of course is going to help reduce your weight, so thereby is going to cut back on the inflammation and the other problems that can occur in your liver, and thereby cut back on the likelihood that you will have fatty liver disease. And so basically, is an excellent article pointing out how being overweight, obese, can actually contribute to fatty liver disease and over time end up, if it's not corrected, in cirrhosis of the liver or some other abnormality involving your liver. And just be reminded that your liver is extremely, extremely important. It plays a huge role in detoxification of toxins in your body. And with liver, and apparently it's very, very, very important because we know that you can lose portion of the liver and it would actually regenerate. So the Creator has designed it in such a way that it's so important that it has the capacity to regenerate. And so we're going to move right on from that article into our next article. And this was an article that was published on December the 8th, which was yesterday. From naturalnews.com, and it's entitled Three Large Meals Per Day is Actually Healthier than Many Small Meals. And it's interesting that over the years of practice that I've been involved in, as well as when I do seminars, when we talk about the type of diet, the number of meals that we should eat, I've always advocated eating two meals a day, three at most. Two meals a day, three at most. And if the third meal is to be eaten, it should be very, very light. Maybe some fruit, and maybe something of the nature of fruit, or maybe a half of a sandwich or something very, very light, some light soup maybe even, which and your largest meal should be your breakfast, and then your next largest should be your lunch, and your last meal, if eaten at all, should be your smallest. Now, conventional wisdom says, okay, we need to eat 6-7 small meals a day. It works better for your metabolism. I've never agreed with that. I've never suggested or recommended that, simply because of the damage that can do over time to the pancreas, as well as it can do to the gastrointestinal tract, because it always stays worked up. It's always working. The digestive organs need rest. The pancreas needs rest. If eating those 6 or 7 meals a day does not really allow the body, the digestive system, to rest, anything that's worn out like that over time is going to cause disease to set in. This article, basically, that was published on yesterday, takes a similar stance. Not exactly the stance that I take, but it takes a very similar stance. It starts off by saying eating three large meals per day might be the healthiest choice for people struggling with their weight. According to a study conducted by researchers from the University of Missouri and published in the journal Obesity. The article goes on to say further that with obesity rates having doubled worldwide since 1980 and they're still on the rise, health researchers are continually searching for ways to help people keep or regain healthier weights. Obesity, the article goes on to say, is strongly linked to a higher risk of cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, various types of cancer, and early death, and has also been implicated in an increased risk of cognitive decline and dementia. including Alzheimer's disease. And we've talked about these things here on Blue Zone Wellness. We've talked about how overweight and obesity is linked to cognitive decline. In other words, it helps or contributes to lessening your intelligence. We've talked about how, and it's nothing new. We've become, because of the number of news stories, et cetera, most people are aware that being overweight or being obese has serious health consequences. The article went on to point out further that more than one-third of all people in the United States are now classified as obese. Now, the article, the lead author of this study from the University of Missouri, talked about how this conventional wisdom now that's emerging about eating all these small meals. In this study, they found out that, of course, that's bearing out to be maybe not as beneficial as being presented. He says, quote, "The mass media and many healthcare practitioners often advocate eating several small meals throughout the day. However," Tim Hayden, who was, again, he continues, the lead author of this study, he says, "However, when we examined the literature, we didn't find many studies examining or supporting this popular claim. This lack of research led to our study, which is one of the first to examine how meal frequency affects insulin and blood fat levels in obese women during an entire day of eating." And then the article goes on to point out what the study entailed. It goes on to say that the researchers observed 8 obese women on 2 separate days. On one visit, the women were assigned to consume 1,500 calories over the course of 12 hours in the form of 3 500-calorie liquid meals. On the other visit, they were assigned to consume 6 250-calorie meals instead. So the same amount of calories, but being consumed in different amounts. And a different time frame, every 30 minutes, they found that the women's blood fat levels were significantly lower when they consumed 3 meals rather than 6. So not just lower, but significantly lower by eating less meals. The article went on to quote another participant in the study, or rather the lead author of the study, Mr. Tim Hayden. Quoting him, the article says, quote, "Our data suggests that for obese women, eating fewer, bigger meals may be more advantageous metabolically compared to eating smaller, more frequent meals throughout the day." He went on to say, quote, "Eating larger meals less often lowered blood fat levels. Over time, consistently eating fewer larger meals each day could lower the woman's blood fat levels and thereby lower their risk of developing heart disease." And the article goes on to say further that although the study's findings still need to be replicated and confirmed for their applicability in the real world, co-author of the study, Jill Connelly, noted that there are sound logical reasons that eating several small meals might be unwise even without specific physiological effects. She pointed out that with multiple meals throughout the day, you have to be careful because if you start consuming several meals, there's more potential to overeat or to make unhealthy snack choices with easily accessible junk food. She goes on to say further that some people are good at making efforts to eat healthy snacks. However, most people aren't, and they end up taking in too many calories. The more times you sit down to eat, the more calories you're probably going to take in. And so even though they recommend, or in their study show, that those eating 3 large meals a day had a significantly lower blood fat levels than those eating all of these small meals. They didn't give the details in this particular article, but they also showed the effect on your blood insulin levels. And so you can't keep your pancreas revved up like that and your gastrointestinal tract revved up like that. It's not natural. And so this is why I've never, ever recommended or suggested that in my practice or in any of the seminars that I do. Again, I've always recommended, and you will find that you do far better by eating 2-3 meals max, and you will find that you will not carry so much weight so easily. You will not do damage to your gastrointestinal tract and your pancreas, and you will be far healthier, and you will have far less problem with obesity and overweight because you're not taking in all of these calories into your system. Now, next, we are going to move on to our main article for this particular segment, the Weekend Natural News Review segment. an article entitled High Heels Can Shorten Achilles Tendons, Deform Feet, and Cause Arthritis in Knees. This article is also taken from naturalnews.com. Very interesting article. Ladies, listen very carefully. This is another thing that in our seminars we've talked about, the danger of wearing high heels. Typically, when we've talked about it in the past, I've mentioned simply the way that the high heels are constructed. They simply throw the alignment of the body off when women are wearing them or when they're walking, and it can cause problems with their menstrual cycle because it tends to tilt the womb, etc., and other problems. But this particular article pointing out to several studies that have pointed out some of the other issues that wearing high heels can cause with women. The article starts off by saying millions of women around the world wear high heels with regularity, but recent research has shown that high heels have a detrimental effect on physiological health, indicating that women should think twice before throwing on their favorite pair of stilettos. And the article points out further that in the study mentioned above, it was a 2011 study, and it reported that exactly 3 out of every 4 women who are daily high heel wearers suffer from consistent shoe-related foot pain, such as bunions, arthritic big toes, calluses, hammer toe, and plantar warts. And I'm going to say that again. This was a 2011 study, and 3 out of 4 women who wear high heel shoes daily suffer from consistent shoe-related foot pain, such as bunions, arthritic big toes, calluses. Okay, we are back on air. We had some serious technical difficulties. Not sure what happened with that, but we are back. And again, we had begun to talk about the issue with high heels and some of the problems that high heel shoes can cause for women. And so I go back a little bit and just to back up a little bit on this particular article. And when I left, I was referencing via that article a 2011 study that reported that exactly 3 out of every 4 women who are daily high heel wearers suffer from consistent shoe-related foot pain, such as bunions, arthritic big toes, calluses, hammer toes, and plantar warts. This research, the article is going to point out, is not alone in finding high heel use to be harmful to the body. And other studies have found that high heels actually impact more than just a woman's foot. And as the article goes on to say, first it talks about scrunched toes. It says the problems with the shoes begin even before getting to the raised heel, as it is overwhelmingly common for high heels to have very narrow toe boxes. And this can be seen by trying to fit a cutout tracing of someone's foot inside of a shoe, especially if the traced foot has not already been deformed by narrow shoe wear. And the article points out that bunions, hammer toes, and calluses are among the chief maladies caused by the small toe boxes and heels. It went on to point out further that one obvious drawback of wearing high heels is a decrease in stability, which can increase the risk of spraining an ankle or injuring another body part in the event of a fall. A less apparent effect of wearing heels is an increased susceptibility, according to the article, to headaches and migraines. And the article points out there isn't any scientific evidence to back up the heels headache association, but many women believe that the increased muscular tension as a result of wearing heels can actually contribute to the headaches or migraines. The article went on to point out further, citing an Iowa State University study, how high heels, habitual high heel shoe wearing, can actually contribute to knee arthritis. And it goes on to point out how less disputable is the impact that high heels have on joints and muscles. They cite a 1998 study done at Harvard Medical School, and this study found that walking in high heels increased the force put on a woman's knee by an average of 23%. And again, citing that study at Iowa State in 2010, they confirmed this conclusion and also discovered that the risk of osteoarthritis in the knee increased with the heel height. And the Iowa State University research also found that increased strain was put on a woman's back as a result of wearing high heels. So here you have Harvard University Medical School and Iowa State University finding, number one, that there are problems with the joints and the muscles and how it actually increases the likelihood of knee arthritis by when you put that pressure on the elevated heel, putting more pressure on the knee. They also, the Iowa State University study also found that it increased strain put on a woman's back, which can actually contribute to that entire muscle area back there, which can also eventually affect the other muscles around up into the neck area as well as the neck area, and also then leading to headaches. So even though there was no hardcore scientific evidence with respect to headaches, it can be deducted from these other studies from Harvard and from Iowa State University that the headache does have a connection to these high heels. And the studies did show, though, that there is a definable connection of osteoarthritis and arthritis in general of the knee and the wearing of high heels. The article goes on to point out further that in 2012, researchers from Queensland, Australia studied the biomechanics of walking in high heels and found that a habitual high heel wearer had a much different gait than those who didn't wear high heels, even when both groups walked barefoot. The most explicit difference, the article points out, found between the two groups was that non-heel wearers engaged their Achilles tendon while walking, whereas habitual high heel wearers did not. Not only does this decrease the movement efficiency of heel wearers, but it also put them at a greater risk for muscle strains. The difference in Achilles tendons usage is so profound that high heel users actually have a physiological decrease in their tendon strength, in their tendon length, rather, as well as length of the calf muscle fibers. So it's actually a physiological effect upon the tendon as well as the calf. This article points out that this shortening of muscle and tendon can be dangerous for heel wearers when they wear shoes that don't raise the heel inches off the ground, because their movement pattern from wearing high heels remains the same. Their high heel movement, the article points out, their high heel movement patterns are incompatible with the new environment and increase the susceptibility for injury. The raised heel can cause calf tightness in addition to strains, which can lead to plantar fasciitis, flat feet, and Achilles tendonitis. So there you have it. Some of the studies and some of the scientific evidence of some of the problems of wearing high heel shoes can be very, very problematic. Now, we lost connection here. We had some technical difficulties there for maybe 5 minutes or so. And so we're going to cut into a little bit of our time, but I think we'll still be able to finish the show as outlined. We're going to take a brief break here, and we'll be right back, and we're going to go right into our healing food segment, where we'll be talking about some of the top foods to eat to help keep your body in an alkaline state. If you stay in an acid state for too long, you can end up with acidosis, and there's a lot of other symptoms that are caused simply by your blood and your bodily fluids overall being acid as opposed to alkaline. We just want to talk about maybe a few foods that can actually help get you to optimal health in terms of your blood and your bodily fluids being more alkaline than acid. We'll be back in just a moment.
How do you feel? No, really. How do you feel? Do you feel lively? Are you bursting with energy? Or do you feel run down and suffer from a lack of energy most of the time? Have frequent colds, aches, and pains of one sort or another? The fact of the matter is that most people in America are not well. But you can begin to change all of that today by simply visiting the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog of Keith Henry, ND, at www.phase3ministries.com/WordPress. Go there now and explore the wealth of amazing wellness information. That's www.phase3ministries.com/WordPress, the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog.
Men, have trouble getting your stream to start? Look for a men's room everywhere you go? Need to go so urgently you can't wait? Worry about impotence, sexual dysfunction, and cancer? Then you need our best-selling supplement, Maximum Prostate. Each Maximum Prostate capsule contains 300 milligrams of pure natural mixed beta-cytosterols from plant sources. That's as much beta-cytosterol content as 3,000 capsules of dried saw palmetto berries. Men all over the U.S. and other countries are experiencing the amazing benefits of Maximum Prostate. You can join them now. To the listeners of Blue Zone Wellness, we are offering you 2 bottles of Maximum Prostate for just $39.95 plus shipping. Just go to MaximumProstate.net and place your order right now. That's MaximumProstate.net, and join the numerous other men who have experienced the power of Maximum Prostate.
Welcome back to Blue Zone Wellness. Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. We are moving right on along into our next segment, which is our healing food segment. And we're going to talk a little bit here about some of the top foods, that are very beneficial to help get you to an optimal level of alkalinity as opposed to acidity in the body. Now, the typical American diet, or the standard American diet, is actually a very deadly diet because it consists primarily of toxic and acid-forming foods like sugars and artificial sweeteners and refined grains, conventionally produced meats, dairy, and other hidden genetically modified organisms. All these things combined with the plethora of other challenging environmental factors, i.e. lack of rest, psychological stress, pharmaceutical drugs, etc., cause all these things help us to understand more clearly why then we would end up in a state of acidity as opposed to alkalinity. Now, what do I mean by that? One of the basic underlying problems with our lifestyle, let me put it this way, is that most of what we eat throws off the pH or the alkalinity, and not only what we eat, but our thoughts, our overall lifestyles. And most of us don't accurately understand this. Most people don't accurately understand this, that the body must balance the blood's pH levels and all the fluid pH levels at a slightly alkaline level. Now, the level for blood pH, ideal level for you to survive is 7.36, 7.345, etc., 7.35. And when we eat food to burn for fuel, the digestive and the metabolic processes transform this food into either a kind of ash, or and all food that we eat leaves either an acid ash or an alkaline ash in the body. The laws of modern biochemistry actually explain that it is not the organic matter of foods, whether the food itself is acidic or alkaline, but rather the inorganic matter that the food leaves, such as the calcium, the magnesium, the potassium, the sodium, the sulfur, the phosphorus, and that is basically how they break down in our bodies. And this determines either the acidity or alkalinity of the substance or the residue left by these particular foods. So this is why it's so important to eat of foods that are more natural. I've called it eating in harmony with the rainbow more frequently, because these foods tend to leave the alkaline ash. They tend to leave the calcium, the magnesium, the potassium, the sodium, the sulfur, the phosphorus, as opposed to consuming these minerals. And for this reason, we have to understand the alkalinity or acidity of foods are very, very, very important. So for if you eat too many acid-forming foods, they will actually have dire consequences for your health. In fact, in my estimation, a pH test over time, a consistent pH test, getting a consistent pH reading, is actually far more accurate in many cases than a blood test, simply because the fluids of the body gives us a snapshot of the acid or the alkaline level, and we know that if enough cells become acid for a long enough period of time, you will die. Whereas optimal health is the exact opposite, is where if you can keep those cells at a healthy alkaline level, which is usually 7.35 blood alkalinity to 7.45, then you're going to be in a state of health as opposed to a state of sickness, a state of alkalinity as opposed to a state of acidosis. Again, if you have enough of your cells that remain acid for a long enough time, you will eventually die. And so too many acid-forming foods, as I said earlier, can have dire consequences for your health, having acidosis, which is basically being a common diagnosis in diabetics, for example. Many diabetics will suffer from acidosis. And this is one of the things when you start dealing with treating these types of diseases, is that when you begin to look at the alkalinity or the acidity of the body, if you can bring the acidity of a person, who say a diabetic who's acid, if you can change their pH, get their pH level of their bodily fluids over into an alkaline level, you're going to have good success. But if you can't get it out of from acid to alkaline, they're going to have problems, and they're going to continue to have problems over the long term. And so this is why it's important to understand why you need to eat foods that are more in harmony with the rainbow to make sure your pH level stays in or gets into an area where it's more alkaline than acid. Now, also when we stop and we think about how when we look at our body when it repairs itself, the nutrients required to maintain an alkaline state in the body can only be obtained from food, and these same foods are what help our body repair itself. Now the body will draw from its own stores, like our bones or our other vital organs or vital tissues, if we're too acid, in an attempt to try and stave off the acidity or the death of its cells. So if you say, for instance, you're deficient in calcium, or you're deficient in magnesium, or you're deficient in potassium because you've not been eating enough alkaline-forming foods, the body needs these minerals and these nutrients to function. So if it's not getting it from the foods, if you're eating French fries and potato chips and candy and junk food and processed foods, and the body is not getting these nutrients, then the body, again, it lives to survive. It will begin to take these nutrients from your bones, from your other organs, and then you will really be in a state of severe deficiency. And if you remain in a state of severe deficiency for a long enough amount of time, you will develop a disease, and if it's not dealt with, you will die, all because on a cellular level, your cells were not alkaline, but they became acid, and too many of them became too acid for too long, and the ultimate result would indeed be death. Now, of course, the ultimate goal of the body is balance, homeostasis. So eating too many alkaline foods can lead to its own fair share of complications over time, but you don't see that as often. Most of the time, what you see is people being too acid. Now, let's look at some of the foods that will actually help maintain an alkaline state as opposed to an acid state. Root vegetables. Root vegetables like radishes, especially black, red, or white, beets, carrots, turnips, horseradish, rutabaga, all of these root vegetables are very, very beneficial to help the blood and the fluids of the body to remain in an alkaline state. Cruciferous vegetables, let's go into cruciferous vegetables, broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, and the like. It's interesting that these same types of foods are actually used to treat different type of diseases. For instance, I mentioned beets and carrots and turnips. People who have diabetes, if you put them on a diet that's high in these greens, juice these greens, in a matter of 7 to 10 days combined with exercise and some of the other things, these foods can place so many nutrients back into the body and to help their pancreas that many times diabetics can actually be off of their insulin in a week, 10 days, 14 days. So it just goes to show at the power of shifting and shaping the blood and the bodily fluids from acid states over to alkaline states. Now, cruciferous vegetables like broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, they're also used as is carrot juice, for instance. In countries that you can treat cancer with natural methods illegally, you will see that these things are used in juices to help because of their high antioxidant content and also because they help alkalize the blood and the bodily fluids. Leafy greens are another food group that you want to eat if you want to help maintain alkaline blood and alkaline bodily fluids. Things like kale, Swiss chard, turnip greens, spinach. And spinach is actually one of your best choices because spinach is especially known for its rich vitamin K and folic acid content. Spinach is also packed with a lot of different vitamins and minerals and phytochemicals and antioxidants and fiber, etc. Another one is garlic. Garlic is considered a true miracle food, and it has quite a bit of, we've talked about it right here before, it has quite a bit of power, and it helps in lowering your blood pressure, it helps in cleansing the liver and fighting off disease. Anything that can help cleanse the liver is going to automatically give the liver more capacity to function and detoxify, and it's going to detoxify those acid materials and of course give you lend you more to the direction of having an alkaline system as opposed to an acid system, as well as lemons. Lemons are also very, very beneficial for help alkalizing the blood. Now, people say, a lemon is actually a citrus. It's true, but remember I said earlier that it's not what the food looks upon or looks like, but rather the type of ash that the food leaves upon the body. And lemon leaves an alkaline ash because it's full of the minerals. Notice I said earlier that if the food leaves a high content of the minerals like calcium, magnesium, potassium, sodium, sulfur, phosphorus, they would tend, and they're not acid in and of themselves, they would tend to be more healthy and to be more alkaline and leave an alkaline ash in the body. And lemon happens to be one of those. Not only that, it can heal wounds. It also provides potent immediate relief for hyperacidity as well as for many viral related conditions. Colds, flu, heartburn. There are ways to use it for colds and flu, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's also actually very, very good to help energize your liver and promote detoxification, as does garlic. Even cayenne pepper, because cayenne pepper is known for its antibacterial properties, and it's also very rich in vitamin A. And so things like this, these foods, these are just a few of the food categories and the foods themselves that actually can actually help your blood as well as your other bodily fluids to remain in an alkaline state as opposed to an acid state. And an alkaline state is preferable. The body is a little bit more alkaline than it is acid, 7.35 to 7.45 blood alkalinity. And it's very important to remember that if no matter what disease or abnormality that you have, if you can bring your blood levels and your bodily fluid levels over into an alkaline state, you're on your way to healing. And if you keep them there, you will eventually be healed. So that's one of the things that I look upon when I work with people is I like to keep a look. I like to keep a watch on their pH, because that gives me an idea whether or not we're going in the right direction and how long it's taking us to get in that direction. And you'll find people who have cancer and diabetes and many of these other diseases, if you check their pH, not just once, you have to do it over a period of time and get the average. If you get that average pH, you'll find that basically 100% of the time, their pH is going to be acid at various levels, and the acidity of the body overall gives you a very, very good snapshot of the health or the disease of that person. Now, to move into our last segment here, because we lost some time when we had the technical difficulties, we have about 6 minutes left. We're going to move right into this last segment and try and finish up this article that I've been talking about for the past 2 weeks that talked about the benefits or the necessity of combining vitamin K2 with calcium, and why it's very important to have them combined in their usage. Now, the if you didn't catch what I said about it last week, you can go back or go to Blog Talk Radio, or you can go to bluezonewellness.org, and you can listen to the archive to kind of pick up where I'm going to pick up where I am now. But generally speaking, we talked about how if you're not getting a lot of sunshine and you're taking calcium or you're taking D3 supplements rather, then you really need to be getting vitamin K2, and you can get it from foods, certain foods. So in other words, if you're taking vitamin D3 and you're not getting out in the sunshine, the fresh air, it could cause a problem because the two work together, the D3 together with the K2. And your bones, I'm going to back up here and make a point here. Your bones are made up of minerals and a collagen matrix. And the minerals give your bones rigidity as well as density. But the collagen gives your bones flexibility. So without good flexibility, they become brittle and they can break easily. So bone strength, then, is more than just bone density. And this is why drugs such as biophosphonates have failed in working with bones. We were talking about calcium and D3 and absorption of D3 and calcium in terms of how it relates to your bones. So just to give you an idea that the bones are the makeup, it's more than just calcium when you're working with the bones. This is where a lot of the emphasis is, where you say drink milk for calcium. But the bones is more than just that. And so drugs like Fosamax, they can build up a lot of minerals and make the bones look very dense on an x-ray called a DEXA scan, which specifically measures your bone density, or the degree of mineralization of your bones. But in reality, your bones are extremely brittle and prone to fracture, which is why there have been so many cases of hip fractures among people taking these drugs. And so it's really a deception in terms of what your bones or the strength of your bones really are. And so because biophosphonate drugs are poisons that destroy your osteoclast. We talked about that again before. If you want to know what I'm talking about when I say osteoclast and osteoblast, just listen to the archive. We really don't have time to go back through that, but I talked a lot about that in the past 2 weeks in the last segment. And so biophosphonate drugs are poisons that destroy your osteoclast, and these interfere with your normal bone remodeling process. So you are much better off building your bones using exercise and nutritional therapies as opposed to taking drugs. So using nutritional therapies like progesterone and vitamin D3 and vitamin K, these are things to help with your overall health-wise, but also for your bones specifically, what we were talking about. Now, this conversation based on how veggies are more effective for getting calcium than drugs, etc. And so basically you need a combination of plant-derived minerals for your strong bones. Your bones are actually composed of at least a dozen minerals. So I said earlier you need more than just calcium. So if you just focus on calcium, you will likely weaken your bones and increase your risk of osteoporosis. And before you know it, there'll be when you get older especially, she fell and broke her hip, when in all actuality her hip probably broke and she fell. And because you may have been on different calcium supplements and not looking at some of the other areas or some of the other things. And because we're running out of time, it looks as if we're still not going to be able to finish this in this week because of the loss of the 5 minutes. We need about another 5 minutes to finish this up. We're not going to have it. We're going to have to take those 5 minutes maybe at the beginning of the show next week. Almost out of time. I thank you for listening. Remember, if you want to go back and listen to the show and take notes, if you don't have time to take notes, you can do so. The replay will be available in probably anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes. It'll be available. Again, remember, we did have a blank also about 5 minutes because we have technical difficulties. Thank you for listening. Have a blessed week.